topic for this morning is, as I put on the top of the sheet, prostate surgery, endometrial ablation, and other serous issues. This topic has evolved in the sense that when we put up the topics for the year, this was, I think, prostate surgery and vasectomy. And then in one of the classes a few months ago, we discussed a little bit the issue of medication, which might render a man impotent. And I wanted to do more research on that. And as I started researching that and started researching the other topics, I came across more topics that were of interest until finally my notes for this class, I have as much material that I'm not using as that I am using. But I tried to pick out four cases that would have practical relevance and would raise interesting halachic questions, which leads to the vignettes that you see here on the page. And I want to thank those who responded to the vignettes that I sent out initially on Wednesday night. That really affected the selection of cases in the end. So the first one is a case of TURP, transurethral resection of the prostate, the concern that it causes retrograde ejaculation, and the problem therefore being that you could affect the fertility of the patient. And is that going to render him what we call a psua daka, that which the Torah refers to, a man who has suffered physical damage to his reproductive system? We'll have to be more specific a little bit later. Is that an act of serus, and therefore prohibited by the Torah? Serus will translate as an action which causes which causes functional damage to the reproductive system, meaning it's an act which will keep the person from being able to procreate. And then finally, is the serous intentional? When you do the prostate surgery, you don't intend. That's not the goal. The goal is not to render the patient infertile, or impotent, but it may happen as a result. So that's the first case. Then we have a second case in which the physician wants to prescribe antidepressants which may have side effects including impotence, but on the other hand, the patient is experiencing bouts of moderate depression. Third, you have a physician who is approached by a woman who wants to have a ova block, is the case that I mentioned there. There are others that I found as well. But she wants to have a silicone plug inserted in her fallopian tubes. Is the doctor allowed to do that? And then if she has the procedure done, is she permitted to get married afterwards? And we'll discuss that in greater depth when we get to the case. And then finally, a case of endometrial ablation meant to reduce and the heavy bleeding that a woman is experiencing, and is that permitted or not? So we'll discuss all of these in turn and hopefully clarify the issues that are involved one by one. We start with a general prohibition against serous, and this requires a degree of clarification just in terms of damage to the reproductive system. There are two separate concepts which get mixed, and they shouldn't be mixed. One is Pitsua Daka, and the other is serous. If you take a look on your sheets at source Aleph, this is discussing karbanos. And it says, "Uma'uch v'chasus v'nasuk v'charus lo sakrivu l'ashem uva'artzechem lo sa'asu." You shall not bring the following animals as a karban. An animal which is ma'uch. Ma'uch, we generally assume to mean, it means that the testicles have been crushed. V'chasus, or it's been cut, or it's another type of crushing, depends on how you take it. Natuk means separation, that there are tubes that have actually been cut. You shouldn't bring these to Hashem as a karban. Uba'artzechem lo sa'asu, and you shall not create them in your lands. Umiyad ben nechar lo sakrivu aslechem elokechem mikol eile. You shall not bring a karban from these, from someone who is not Jewish either. Ki mashchasam bahem mum bam. I brought you the translation of mashchasam from the Targum. They have been damaged. They are blemished. Lo yeratzu lachem. They will not be acceptable to you. And this blemish, we are taught, as far as kohanim, disqualifies the kohen from working in the Beis HaMikdash, and it disqualifies an animal from being a karban. And we're told separately in the Torah that a man who is in such a state is called in general by the generic term Pitsua Daka. He has crushed genitalia, and he is not allowed to get married. That's all one. There is no statement in the Torah of a prohibition against doing any of these. It isn't that we're saying you may not do this. It's saying that it's saying that you can't bring this animal as a carbon, a kohen in this state cannot serve, and so on. So that's number one. Item number two within this is a prohibition against creating such a state, doing something to an animal or doing something to a person which is going to put that animal or person in such a position. In the pasuk that I just quoted, the first pasuk I quoted, it says, "U'ba'artzechem lo sa'asu," you shall not generate these in your lands. The question, though, is whether u'ba'artzechem lo sa'asu, you should not do this in your land, whether that automatically includes creating all of these things or only creating a subset of those or an expanded set of those. So that's what we require Medrash and Gemara to understand. Yes?
I don't quite understand the distinction. The first one just says they can't serve and they can't be a carbon. Okay. And the second one is now going to the idea that you can't do these types of injuries.
Correct.
To an animal or a human.
Correct.
In the land.
Correct.
And you said there's a subset that I didn't quite.
Right, because it's not clear that both refer, that the description in the first category and the prohibition in the second category refer to the same set of cases. And that's what we're going to have to see. So, if you take a look in source base, you find the Sifra commenting on Parshas Emor, giving us a little bit of an expansion of this, referring to the laws for men as well as for women. First of all, lo sakrivu, you shouldn't bring these as a karban, it says. Ein li ela shelo yakrivu. That tells me you can't bring them as a karban. Minayin shelo yasu. How do you know you can't do those? You can't create those? Tamalomar lo sasu. That's why the Torah says, don't make this. Minayin af ba'adam. How do I know this refers to people also? After all, the context here is regarding animals. Tamalamar uvachem. Kedivrei ben Chachinoi. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinoi says, the Torah says, uvachem, among yourselves, you shall not have them. And therefore, that teaches me that you're not allowed to do this to people either, to men either, I should say. And then on the next pasuk, he says, minayin shana kevos besirus. How do you know that it applies to women as well? Talmud Lomar ki mashchasam bahem mumbam. So the Tanakhama, the initial view, says this pasuk that says mashchasam bahem mumbam is meant to include both men and women. Otherwise, it would have left it as ubartzachem lo sasu. You expand here to include women as well, even though the types of damage that were described in the previous pasuk were really male specific. Nonetheless, this expands to women. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, no, it says Bahem, Mashchasama Bahem. So Bahem is a male word. Otherwise it would be Bahen. So therefore he says, Ein Nekevos Besirus, which we take right now to mean the prohibition against Sirus does not refer to women patients at all, does not refer to doing this to women, it only refers to doing this to men. So what we have in the Sifra is a machlokes regarding the case of women between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama, but everybody agrees you can't do this to men. So far, so good. Now take a look. Yes?
I'm curious. You chose these psukim here. What about the pasuk of Hushapad Vayot Kal Hashem? Is that
right?
Is that because there's no action there? In other words, that seems to be the passive?
Right, because there it's simply describing a person in a certain state and saying he can't wed. We're going to come across that pasuk in a little bit, but it's not used as a
humans, and here we're drawing an analogy from an animal,
right.
Whereas that's the human. But okay.
Right, because here the Torah actually says "Ubaritzachem lo sa'asu," which we have not.
There.
Correct. Okay. Correct. That pasuk will become relevant shortly, but not quite yet. So if you take a look at source Gimel, you find the version of this that appears in the Gemara in Shabbos, and that adds to the complexity. They're talking about a medication, Liarkona, for a person who is experiencing a disease called Yarkona, Tarin b'shichra, I added the Hebrew version of Tarin in the bracket there, where Shore b'shichra umeyakar, we soak the ingredients, if I remember correctly, in alcohol, and the person who takes this will be meyakar, will actually become unable to procreate. That's your cure for Yarkona. So the Gemara says, Umishari, is that permitted? Vatanya, don't you know the Brisa? Minayin lesirus ba'adam shu'asar, how do you know you're not allowed to be misares? That's the verb form. You can't render a man infertile. Shu asur tamaloma varzachem lo saasu bachem lo taasu diva Rabbi Chanina. That was Rabbi Chanina, who he quoted as Ben Chachinai in the Sifra. He says you're not allowed to do something to a man that's going to make him unable to procreate. So the Gemara answers Hani mili hecha de kamachavein. His answer, her first answer is that's where it's intentional. That's your goal. Here, it's just a natural result. You're trying to treat a disease, and the sterilization is a byproduct. I keep using words imprecisely, and I apologize for that. I've used the word before, infertile, impotent, and sterilize, and all that, and I know that from a technical standpoint, they're not the same. What I mean when I use these terms is unable to reproduce. So he says that's where the goal is, to render him unable to reproduce. Here, it's a side effect. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan said, this is an interesting discussion for any veterinarians. Harotza sheyasaris tarnagol. If you want to keep a rooster from procreating, yitol karvalto umistares me'elav. Remove the crest from the bird, and it will be unable to reproduce. That's a way to cause the rooster to be unable to procreate. To which the Gemara asks, "V'amar Rav Ashi Ramus Rucho Dinikitalei." To which the Gemara says, "That's not necessarily proof of anything, because that's not a case of Sirus at all. That's actually a case in which you cause the rooster to stop mating, because the rooster, when it loses its crest, evidently it's somehow disgraced among the birds. It doesn't have the literally, he says, it's arrogant. It doesn't want to be seen without its crest. And that's why the rooster stops getting involved with the chickens. But as a general rule, I would not be permitted to engage in Sirus, even if Sirus is not my desired result. Ella Bisaris, rather, it's talking about someone who is already a Saris. I added in the word Kvar. It's talking about where you're treating someone who already can't procreate. So that's where this medicine is going to be permitted. So we've rejected the idea that sterilization as a side effect is going to be acceptable, and instead said it must be talking about where the patient is already unable to procreate. To which the Gemara asked, I skipped some words here that weren't germane for us. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say that everybody agrees you're not allowed to perform an act of Sirus even to someone who is already Misuras, to someone who already can't procreate? You're still not allowed. Shneamar, the pasuk says, Uma'uch v'chasus v'nasuk v'charus. It lists all these types of damage to the system, and it asks, Im al karus chayav al natuk lo kol shekein? You didn't need to list all of these. Some of them are more aggressive than others. Once you list the ones that are less aggressive, you don't need to list the ones that are more aggressive and say that those are also prohibited. It's there to teach me that if someone had suffered lesser damage that already rendered him a saris, and then I perform an action on him that's going to cause him greater damage, that he's now going, that I'm liable again. So I can't be misaris, a saris. So the answer can't be that you're allowed to treat Yarkona this way if the patient is already a saris. So again, my problem is, you recommended a treatment which on the face of it is usur. How could you have given me such a recommendation? So our first answer was to say that it's unintentional Sirus. We threw that out. Our second answer is it's when you're treating someone who's already a Sirus. We throw that out. Interestingly, the Gemara does not entertain the possibility that it's simply saying, you know, here is the treatment, but you're not meant to carry it out. I think of the Rambam. I did a lot of work some years back on the... This is going to be the same as Kosher Likaron. Yes. I did some work a few years ago on the Rambam's diet recommendations, and the Rambam tells you that the healthiest food, you know what the Rambam says? You know what the Rambam says the healthiest food is? Should I ask? Not even close. Pork. The Rambam says the healthiest food is pork. He's not recommending that you eat it, but that's what he writes. It has to do with the sources for his theory of diet in general. The Rambam places a lot of emphasis on digestion and a couple other things, and less so on what we would today talk about in terms of nutrition. So he says actually the healthiest food is pork, and the least healthy food is matzah. That's what the Rambam says. It's a very interesting discussion. We'll have to have that some other time. But in any case, I'm just surprised that the Gemara doesn't even entertain as a possibility that we were listing the cure, but not prescribing it. The Rambam isn't saying you should go out and eat chazer. He's just saying it happens. He happens to consider it very healthy. But the Gemara doesn't take that approach here. Rather, it answers one line up from the bottom in Source Gimel, Ve'ela bizakein. It's talking about someone who is elderly. That's my answer. But that doesn't work either. In other words, if they're elderly, so then you're not renting them a saris at all. They're already fully mesuras. But he says, he says, but it's not so. Rabbi Yochanan said, even when I became old, certain things brought me back to my youth again. In other words, it's possible still to be rejuvenated. Ella be'isha. So it must be talking about a woman. It's not talking about treating a man at all. It's talking about treating a woman for Yarkona, and for a woman it would be permitted. To which the Gemara says, Ulav Yochanan ben Broka, da Amar al Shneim hu Omer, vayvarecho samalokim, vayomer lem pru ruvu ma'igol ameimar. What about Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's view? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that women are instructed in pru ruvu as well. So the answer bizakeno, it's talking about a woman who is already older. And could not procreate anymore. Inami ba'akara, or a woman who was congenitally unable to reproduce. That's your discussion here. It is, as Rabbi Burlap pointed out, a discussion that we subsume under the heading in general called kos shel ikarin, which could mean a cup of herbs, or it could mean kos shel akarin, a cup of sterilization. But it's a drink one might imbibe, which would render somebody infertile. And in fact, we're going to have to discuss the rest of it where the Gemara actually uses that term a little bit later. So, in the Source Gimel, which we are presented with here, we are told that there's a prohibition against rendering a male a saris, and against rendering a woman a saris after she, either, if you take the view she's not instructed in Pururavu, I'm sorry, if you take the view she, a prohibition against rendering a woman a saris if she is instructed in Pururavu. Yes? Right, so that's exactly the problem. Is there or isn't there a prohibition against sterilizing a woman? It is not clear yet. I'm going to come back to it in a second with an additional source, so hold on to the question. You're right. We haven't gotten to the end of the question yet. We've got to the end of the question, and then we're going to have to try to resolve this. Just wait, it gets worse.
Let's come back to Zakeno. We have technology today in which an older woman, in fact, has given birth.
Correct.
So, is it would it render it to be usher? That someone who has the potential,
yes,
of being a male.
The answer is quite possibly. The answer is quite possibly, because zakena is a subjective term. Just ask anyone, you know, are you a zakena, are you a zakena, and they'll tell you it's a subjective term. But by using the term zakena, what he's suggesting is someone who has reached the age at which reproduction is no longer going to take place. If we can push that age later, whether via diet or whether intervention, then it does raise the possibility that zakena now has to take on new meaning. Okay, so I want to separate the discussion regarding the males and the discussion regarding the females. The females discussion is more complex. The males discussion, take a look at source number Dalet.
Yes. Tomorrow we're left with, is there no explanation to how it's nishar?
No, we did. We ended up saying that it's a woman who has already aged out, or is an akara, she could never reproduce.
In other words, you're saying that it's not.
And the answer is permissible for this subset of cases. Only for women who are past the age of bearing children, or women who could never bear children before. Because the Torah only said Misaris Acha Misaris regarding the male.
Presumably, there's an end point to that. Whatever you think is the king, and you could push it also, that's not that case. We have to keep going.
Yes.
The end where there is really no
yes.
current way to push it off.
Correct. Correct. Okay? So far, unclear still, I hope. If you take a look at Dalet, we get the Rambam's psak on Sirus. He says, Asur lahafsid evrei zera bein ba'adam bein bibehema. He says, you're not allowed to destroy the organs of reproduction, whether in a person or in an animal. Chay of ov, or a wild animal, or a bird. Echa tmeim vecha taharim, whether they are of non-kosher species or kosher species is irrelevant. The reason he has to say that is because the pasuk was regarding a karban. Karbanos are only of kosher species. Bein be'eretz Yisrael, bein b'chutz la'aretz, as we noted, it says in the pasuk Be'eretz Achem lo sa'asu, we say that includes outside of Israel as well. He says it. Aval b'shnemar Be'eretz Achem lo sa'asu, even though the pasuk says not in your lands. Mipi ha'shmu'olam du shadavar zenoig b'chol makom. We are taught by tradition it applies everywhere. The inyan akasuv lo ye'aseh zos b'Yisrael. Bein begufan, bein begufa acherim. The pasuk itself is telling me it should not be done among Israel, among the Jews, whether with their bodies or the bodies of others. There's a whole other topic I'm not going to reach today of ben Noach. Whether this applies to non-Jews as well, it is understood by some to be one of the Noahide laws. So that has a whole new wrinkle to this. V'cholam esareis loke min hatara v'chol makom v'afilam esareis achar esareis loke. If you cause serious, you get malkos, biblical malkos. And even if it's to someone who is already is a saris, that's regarding males. That's the Rambam statement about males. What we have here, and this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch as well, is a prohibition against damaging the Evrei Hazera. That's the Rambam's term. The organs of the reproductive system for a male. What about for a female? How do we understand, as Jack pointed out, the Sifra in Source Beis said that there's a machlokes regarding women. Right, the Tanakhama said it does apply to women. Rav Yudah said it does not apply to women. The Gemara in Shabbos seemed to indicate it does apply to women. And now take a look at Source Hay, the Tosefta in Makos. V'amisareis es ha'adam v'es ha'behema v'es ha'chaya v'es ha'ofos. Do this to one of these creatures. Bein gedolim, bein ketanim, bein zacharim, bein nekevos. Whether male or female, harei zechayav. The Tanakhama says you are liable. Rav Yehuda Omer, Misareis Zicharim Chayav, Masris Nekevos Potter. Rav Yehuda says, for females, you're Potter. Contrast, I put it in bold because I wanted to make sure this would be obvious. In Source Beis, Rav Yehuda said, Ein Nekevos Besirus. Does that sound like one is exempt from liability, or does what sound like it does sound like it's mutter entirely? Yeah? Right, doesn't apply at all, means mutter. Right? We have within our halachic lexicon two words to indicate that an action is not out and out usr. One is the word patur, the other is the word mutar. Mutar, generally, is the term we use to mean something is entirely permitted. Go ahead, do it, have fun. Patur, on the other hand, generally indicates you're not supposed to do this, but if you do it, you're not liable. It can apply, for example, to an isr de rabbanan. When you're dealing with the rabbinic prohibition, the rule generally is, based in can't do anything to you for violating it, however, you're not supposed to do it. So why do I have Rabbi Yehuda making the statement in Source Beis, Ein Nekevos Besirus, which sounds to me like women, like it's mutter. A woman comes into the doctor's office and she says, I would like you to do something to make sure I will never be able to have children. The doctor is allowed to do it. And there's no question even. Whereas in Source Hay, he says patur, which sounds like he's simply exempt from liability, but he's not supposed to do it. So, this is a problem. There are three different approaches that I've seen to resolving this problem. Take a look at Source Vav, which is going to make it worse before it makes it better. The Rambam says, V'amisareis es hanakeva bein ba'adam bein b'sha'ar minim. If you do serious to a woman, whether you're talking about a female animal or you're talking about a person is irrelevant here. Patur. His ruling is patur, which sounds like Rabbi Yehuda in the Tosefta. But I don't know what the Rambam is going to do with Rabbi Yehuda in the Sifra, where he seemed to say mutter entirely. So a few different suggestions. The Vilna Gaon proposes perhaps the most radical suggestion. I'm actually going to do it last, even though I put his source here, in Zion. We're going to jump his source for a second. If you take a look at that source Ches, Yabia Omer, Rav Avadya Yosef, bless you, quoting the Tshuvos Beis Yehuda and others, suggests that it's a dirabanan. He says, Umasha Amru Shein Siris Binakeva. When we say that Sirus doesn't apply by women, which is what we saw in Rabbi Yehuda in the Sifra, Hainu ain din Sirus le aser bless or min haTorah binakeva. There's no biblical prohibition. Ava pu'ulas hasirus asura binakeva midirabbanan, but rabbinically you would not be allowed to do it. Why? Gezerah nekeva adu zachar. Because people are going to get confused. You tell them you're allowed to do this for women, not allowed to do this for men. They're going to get confused and come to think that it's allowed for men also. So therefore Rav Avadya resolves the problem by suggesting that maybe it's an iser dirabanan. So therefore, when we had in the Sifra the statement of Ein Nekevos Besiros, it meant Siros doesn't apply, but there's Gezerah dirabanan. That would be the way to take Rabbi Yehuda in the Sifra. Whereas in the Tosefta, he says Potter because he's dealing with an overall, not just in terms of Sirus, but in the overall picture. That's one approach. A second approach is suggested by the Taz on Eben HaEzer. He's not printed in the usual place the Taz is, but in fact he's at the bottom of the page. And I didn't have it in a cut and pastable format and didn't retype it. But the Taz in Eben HaEzer, Simen Vav, Sivka and Vav, writes that it's an issue of tsar. You're causing pain to her. It's a separate prohibition. It's not a matter of sirus. It's a matter of wounding somebody, effectively. That's his explanation of the consideration, which leads to the question, well, what if she wants this to be done to her? What if it's medically warranted and so on? That means there are all sorts of ways in which it might become permitted. As opposed to if it's sirus, he'll tell me, well, it's a hard and fast biblical prohibition. The Vilna Gaon suggests, if you take a look at Zor Zion, he says, Upasa Ketana Kama. He says the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are following not the view of Rabbi Yehuda, but the view of the Tana Kama. The Tana Kama was the one who said that Sirus does apply to Nekevos to women. Ela de'ein behem malkos, but there are no lashes. Kevin de lo nichalu belosa se de lo sa'asu. He says when the prohibition is stated in the Pasuk, when it says, Ubarzachem lo sa'asu, that's regarding males. Regarding women, it's not under the lo sase with malkos, with lashes attached to it, because it's simply a drasha from that pasuk. Now we're going to say this expands to include women as well. You don't have an explicit lo sase, an explicit prohibition regarding women. So the way he understands it is that it's actually what could be called either a lo sase, a prohibition without lashes, or an iser ase. It's stated as an assay. The problem is I don't know what the assay would be. An active mitzvah. But the bottom line out of all three of these, whether you take the view quoted by Rav Avadya that it's a derabanan, or whether you take the view suggested by the Taz that it's an issue of pain, wounding and pain, or you take the statement of the Vilna Gaon that it's not a prohibition like other prohibitions in the Torah, it's a reduced level prohibition, that opens up various leniencies, which you won't necessarily have in the case of the male. Yes. So he'll say pater means it is absolutely prohibited, pater aval aser. However, there's nothing a beis din can do to you because it's not a los asay with malkos. Why? Right, so you have to go looking to see whether the Rambam does this in general. But but I think that it is legit. You could do it. The problem really, the real problem that you have with this approach of the Vilna Gaon is simply that it doesn't fit both sources. Meaning, if you take a look at Rabbi Yehuda in the Sifra, he says, Ein Nekevos Besirus. If you're saying Ein Nekevos Besirus, it doesn't sound like you mean Pater. So Mordechai Halperin, in an article on this in Asya, comes up with a very interesting suggestion. In the Gemara in Shabbos that we read before, we suggested that the prohibition against Sirus for a woman may depend on whether you believe that women are obligated in procreation in the first place, in Peruvu, leaving aside L'Sheves Yitzara. So if you're going to say that, so he suggests maybe there's actually a machlokas between the Sifra in Beis and the Tosefta in Hay. That maybe the Sifra, which has Rabbi Yehuda say, Sirus doesn't apply to women at all, is taking the view that women are exempt from Peru Revu. Whereas the Tosefta in Source Hay is taking the view that women are obligated in Peru Revu. It's an interesting idea.
I don't understand the Vilna Gaon's statement. How is that not a derabanan?
No, he's saying it's a Del-Raisa. He's saying the Vilna Gaon is taking the view that it's a Del-Raisa, just not a Lo Sase with Malkos attached. Because it's not included in the explicit lo sase in the pasuk, we learned it by extrapolation, and he doesn't consider that he doesn't assume that will include it on the del raisa level, not on the del raisa level, I should say, in the entire lo sase. It is still del raisa as the Vilna Gaon takes it. So this is all going to matter when we talk about the issues for women. This is all just background so that we understand the basic prohibition. Now we need to get into its applications. So the case of TURP, or transurethral resection of the prostate, I did a lot of reading. I found some very interesting material online for this, and I also communicated with a friend from Allentown who's a urologist, and he gave me a lot of background on this. So if I have this right, and if I don't, it's my fault, not the fault of all my background research. But if I understand this right, first of all, TERP, as we call it, or as it is in the literature, is the most common surgical procedure for the case of what they call benign prosthetic hyperplasia. When we say benign, I'm assuming this means non-metastatic. That's the idea of benign.
Non-malignant.
Not cancerous at all. Okay. Right. Can it cause kidney damage?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And from my understanding is that it accounts for about 90%, based on the material that I had seen, of all surgeries for this. That information may be old. It could be that now it's less, but that was my understanding based on pretty recent stuff that I saw. And what the doctor is doing essentially is using a surgical implement to trim away the excess tissue from the prostate. Now, the problem with serous is this. Normally, there's an internal sphincter at the bladder neck that keeps seed from going back into the bladder when it enters the urethra. It essentially keeps it going forward instead of going backwards. But a common result of the procedure is that the internal sphincter will not work, which can cause then retrograde ejaculation. The seed goes back, and the urologist I consulted said that it's about 50% of patients after TERP will experience retrograde ejaculation. Is that number consistent with? Okay, that's the number that he gave me. So, in truth, he said there are ways that you can modify the surgery. You can use laser. Is another option, and he said that takes you down to about a 30% chance. And then he said there are minimally invasive treatments like microwave treatment, which don't cut the bladder neck at all. And in that case, it has the same chance of retrograde ejaculation as medical therapy would have. He mentioned Flomax in particular, Tamsulosin, with a result of about 15% of men experiencing this. So your rate can be anywhere from 50% down to 15%, depending on what it is that you're actually recommending. Well, why would this be serous? So here we come back to the point I made about serous not necessarily applying to all cases of Pitsua Daka or applying to broader cases than Pitsua Daka. It seems like a patient who underwent this treatment and actually became unable to procreate would not be a Pitsua Daka. May still be under serous, but would not be a Pitsua Daka for four reasons. Pitsua Daka is the Kohen who's unable to work in the Beis Hamikdash. He has literally a crushed system. That's Ma'uch Natuk Harus and Natuk and Harus that we described there in the Pasuk. The reason why this may not render him a Pitsua Daka, by the way, sorry, one more step. The reason why that matters is because a Pitsua Daka is not allowed to get married. So in other words, a man who underwent this procedure and became a Pitsua Daka, if you say he is a Pitsua Daka, is not able to marry. On the other hand, if it's prohibited as serous but doesn't render him a Pitsua Daka, he can still go get married. So we care very much about whether he is a Pitsua Daka or not. So one reason he is not a Pitsua Daka is in source tests, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, the Smag, and others, but I brought you his, codify Pitsua Daka this way. Amar Shmuel, quoting from a Gemara in Yevamos, which we'll have to see in a little bit. Shekol psul sha'amarnu be'inyan zeh. Every type of disqualification mentioned here, k'shelohayu bidei shamayim, only refers to when it's done by a person. It's not done by heaven, elavidei adam. It's done by human agency, olayadei pshiaso, or by his carelessness. Kagon shekarso adam, if a person came and did this to him, oiko coats, or he was damaged by some kind of a thorn, avalim nolad kach, but if a person is born in this way, olayadei choli iralo, or it happened to him because of some illness, kosher lavo bakahal. He is kosher to get married, he's allowed to get married. The Chasam Sofer says on this that we include within the heter any action that is therapeutic. Because the wording here was al yaday pshia, if it happens via careless activity. Therefore, if it happens via medical intervention, it's not going to render him a p'tsua daka, he is able to get married. That's number one. Number two is that the prohibition may not include anything inside the pelvis. The prohibition may be only those parts of the body that are actually beyond the pelvis. If you take a look at source Yud, where the Shulchan Aruch provides you with the description of p'tsua daka, he says, "Ezu p'tsua daka." What is a p'tsua daka? Kol shenifzu habeitzim shelo, when the beitzim are themselves damaged. Uchrus shafcha, which is another term used in the Torah. This is the pasuk that Lazer was referring to. Kol shenichras hagid shelo, if the gid, the member itself, is cut. Ubishlosha evarim efshar sheyipasel hazachar, there are three organs that might be damaged such that he would become disqualified. Begid, the member, ubebeitzim, ubeshvilim shebehem misbashel shichvas zera vehem hanikram chute beitzim, and the tubes in which the seed becomes prepared for procreation, which are called chute habeitzim. And the question is, what do those refer to? And the answer seems to be only the ones that are outside of the pelvis, not the ones that are internal. There are a few different reasons that are presented for this. The Chazon Ish, for example... Sorry?
I don't understand something. What's outside the pelvis? The genitalia.
The epididymis and the vas deferens are the ones that are outside the pelvis. If I have, if I'm the other way around?
No, the pelvic, excuse me, you mean the pelvic, the physical pelvic bone is internal to the body.
Yes.
As opposed to anatomy that's external.
No.
That's what he's saying.
Right, that's what he's saying.
But the prostate would be
internal.
Yes, the prostate itself is internal, and where the prostate is seated is internal, yes. The part where you're doing the surgery is internal, is considered internal halakha. That's the argument.
In a terp.
Sorry? In a terp.
Yeah.
Correct. Is considered to be inside. The Chazon Ish's argument is that it can only be those that are outside that are going to be the problem, because the internal segments are not mentioned in the discussions in Chazal. They're simply not there. The others present other arguments. There's a great discussion, which I'm going to skip for now in the interest of time, but I'll come back to it at the end for anyone who can stick around about this. Yes?
Can't you justify it on the basis of majority? If the majority of patients have the operation are not trained to infertile, then the procedures, let me just say, the risk is, let's say, 50%. It means that 70% are not affected.
Why would that be permitted then? Why would I say that because it doesn't work that way in the majority of patients, therefore I don't have to...
normally we go by the majority. The principle of majority is that there is a risk of infertility.
There's a principle of majority in certain issues, that's true. But I think that in a case like this, I think you would need to reduce your minority to more like the 10% range in order to be able to go with the majority. 10% is the classic for what's called a miyud hamatsui. Miyud hamatsui means a minority that is, literally a minority that is found, a relatively common minority. And once you reach that threshold for various halachic purposes, we say you can't go ahead and just say, well, I think that that it won't happen because it doesn't happen in the majority of cases. Once you hit 10%, you have what's considered, I guess, a significant minority, and you can't ignore it. That tends to be the approach. It requires greater discussion to explain why in some cases and not in others. But yeah, I think here, saying that it occurs in 30 or 50% of cases would be enough to make me say, wait a minute, I'm not so sure you can do that. We have the other heterim here, but I don't think the fact that it's not in majority would help me here. That's my sense of it.
In this definition here, the last part
right, so that's actually the definition of p'tsua daka. That's why I'm saying that this is not about sirus. Sirus is broader than this.
Because look, if you read ezim p'tsua daka, kol shenichras habeitzim shelo, that's the definition of p'tsua daka. Then he goes and he explains what krus shafcha is, and then he has a summarizing statement which sounds like it's more like sirus.
Except that he says sheyipasel hazachar, which is a terminology we use for p'tsua daka, not for sirus.
But that would also include krus shafcha.
Yes.
I mean, that could.
Yes. It includes ma'uch, natuk, charus. It includes the whole long list.
Baruch Hashem. As serious, it changes everything.
Yeah, but it's not that serious.
You're saying that the definition of
Psuadaka, and in general, the Asur Lover Bakal, the one who's not allowed to get married.
Which is not serious.
Serious is broader. That's correct. This is the consensus in the postgame. I'm not making that up. I'll let you know when I am, but that seems to be the rule.
One would have thought that a serious is the verb and Psuadaka is the noun, but they're really not.
They're really not. They're really two different things. Correct. So we have two reasons so far for leniency. One reason that it's therapeutic, and then the second reason that it's a part of the body that's actually inside rather than external. Third is that this may be considered bidei shamayim altogether. Not only is it not pshia, is it not an act of carelessness, but it's actually considered to be done by God, even though you're the one carrying out the surgery. If you take a look in the Rambam, in source Tesvav, every disqualification that we've mentioned is when it doesn't happen literally bidei shamayim by Hashem, right? It's the same thing that we saw in the smog in Tess. Like we said, it was done to him by a person, it was done by a dog, he had in that case, it was happened by a thorn. But if he's born that way, or he became ill, and therefore these organs ceased to function. He had some kind of boils and that damaged them, or cut them. He is able to get married. Because all of these are considered to be bidei shamayim. Now Rashi there says bidei shamayim means, if you take a look at source Tezayin, Rashi on the Gemara that he is quoting says al yedei ra'amim ubarad o mimei imo. He seems to consider bidei shamayim natural causes. It happened via thunder. The guy was frightened and somehow that damaged his system. Don't ask me, that's what he says. Ubarad, it happened via hail. Or it happened congenitally. That's Rashi there. However, the Chazon Ish, take a look at Yud Zayin, comes up with a remarkable statement. Ve'af im, it should be im, not a sam. I'll have to correct that before I upload the digital version. I was cutting and pasting from a scanned in Chazon Ish. Ve'im haya tzorech refua, lachtoch ma'at mibasar habari, esher de la refua chashiv bidei shamayim. It could be, he says, if it's a medical need to cut away from healthy flesh, he's talking about prostate surgery, that's his context. So if medically he needs to cut into the flesh, esher de la refua chashiv bidei shamayim. It could be that since it's done for medical purposes, that's called bidei shamayim. It's not called bidei adam. It's not called human agency. It's called being done by God. And k'moshikasav marshal, as he attributes to the marshal, and therefore, again, the prostate surgery would not render him p'tzuadaka. It potentially could be an Isser Sirus, that's correct. But we have to see whether it's Sirus or not. But at this point, we know he can get married. We have a partial Hatzalah so far. So that's an interesting source. Reason number four to be matir is Rabbi Elazar Metz. Rabbi Elazar Metz says that the whole question in the Gemara where they actually deal with this case, we didn't see it because I jumped over it in the interest of time, but I want to come back to it at the end. He says the whole discussion in the Gemara on this isn't really about Tzuadaka anyway. It's not about Tzuadaka to get married anyway. That's a separate point though. I don't want to get that far into it. It would still render the person a Sirus. So here's my question, our first vignette. We have a patient who is experiencing painful difficulty, right? Jason, he's 50 years old, has been experiencing painful difficulty in urination due to growth of his prostate. The urologist offers TURP. Would this render him psuadaka? The answer seems to be no. Would this be an act of serus? The answer seems to be yes. However, there may well be heterim. Number one, in terms of the need for treatment. If it's going to cause damage to his kidneys, ultimately if left untreated, that is considered to be ultimately cholesha yesh bo sakana. That is danger. That would put him in the position of being dangerously ill. Number two, even if you'll argue that, you know, maybe in his condition and with his life expectancy or whatever, it's not going to damage his kidneys, he's still going to be able to be okay, it certainly does render him to be a chole. And he's experiencing tsar, and it's significant pain. It's significant tsar. This is not something small. It's significant enough it can confine him to bed, which is generally the threshold for Shabbos issues, for example, to warrant certain types of intervention, even on Shabbos. Number two, though, is that your intent is not to sterilize him. That's not the goal. And that matters a great deal because it puts it in the category of davar she'eino miskaven, where you're causing something that is not your intended result. Take a look, please, at source Yud Ches. Source Yud Ches is from a Tosfos, and it's dealing with the discussion that Rabbi Berlat mentioned before, the discussion of kos shalikar in someone who takes a medication that will render them infertile, but it's not the goal. That's not why they took the medication. They took it for some other purpose. So he says there, V'chein mashma v'perak, it's source Yud Ches, v'perak kol psuya mugdashin, he quotes a Gemara in Bechoros, Dishmua sovar k'rabi shimon b'chola tarakula didavar she'i miskaven shari. Rabbi Shimon says, regarding the laws of Shabbos, that if I perform an action on Shabbos, which will break Shabbos, but not that's not my intention was some other benefit, then the action is actually permitted. It wasn't my goal. That's what Rabbi Shimon says there. And Tosfos says, Shmuel rules that we follow Rabbi Shimon, not just for laws of Shabbos, but in general. So even though it's going to cause serious, that's not why I'm doing it, and therefore it will be permissible. He says, the only reason why the kos ikarin would be prohibited then in the Gemara that we saw is because it's a guaranteed result. And here Jack's point becomes relevant for us again. The statement that the kos shalikaren is asur, right? We've read the whole discussion in the Gemara in Shabbos, which said, well, maybe it's talking about someone who's already a saris, or it's talking about a woman and all that, right? Assumed that taking this drink is asur, but that's because it was a guaranteed result. They said, when you drink this, it's going to cause this result. If it's a guaranteed result, your intentions don't matter. However, where the result is not guaranteed, right? You're taking this drink in order to cure something else, or you're doing this surgery in order to cure a different problem, then davar she'eino miskaven will render it permissible. So when Jason comes to the doctor and says, I would like to have this surgery done, the doctor's answer is, mutter. Why? Because it's davar she'eino miskaven. This is not the intended result, and it's not a guaranteed result. Not to mention, we're dealing with a case of tsar, you're dealing with a case of significant pain. Now, theoretically, I want to go back to the point that Laser made, because it's important to state the other side. It's possible for an act of serus to be permitted, but for it to render him a psuadaka. In other words, the flip side is also true. Theoretically, the action might be permitted, but it would render him unable to marry. But that's not the case here, because he's not called a psuadaka for any of the reasons that we mentioned. So in other words, Jason is fine. He gets the surgery, he continues with his wife, he can marry again, whatever the case is, but it's not a problem. Yes?
I'm just wondering, maybe now we can shave it down and do it with laser surgery. But this gets better and better. Initially, let's say, when the treatment started, and this was still tremendously beneficial to the patient, let's say it was.
So that's a really good question. I mean, the earliest literature that I've seen, it goes back decades to when I would have thought it would have been, you know, a newer surgery. I mean, the Chazon Ish is writing on this. He can't be writing any later than the 1940s on this. I don't know what the statistics were with the surgery at that point. I would assume it was higher than 50%, just given the technology they had.
Totally different surgery. They cut the vas deferens. It was 100%.
It was 100%.
Interesting. The Moshe wrote on it, or the Chazon Ish wrote on, was not a term. That's cutting the vas deferens. Mm-hmm. So that was 100%.
That was 100%.
So the question there is it serous permitted? Because it's going to be serous.
Right.
Two, is it suadaka?
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Totally
so I didn't do the research on why it would have been permitted back then. I can theorize. that they would have also said, with the state of medicine back then.
Based on his Kazamish, that's what he said. It was the whole idea.
Because it was in the pelvis?
I'm sorry?
The serum is because it was in the pelvis.
No, in those days, it's not far outside. This is thinking that inside, but it's a bad difference. Inside, so
yeah, but that would only render it not a psuadaka. That wouldn't remove the serious concern.
Correct.
But I think the heter for serious may well still be because of the potential damage if you leave it go.
Correct.
I think that that's where it would come from. That's my guess, but I'm not 100% sure. Okay, so that's our first case. What about taking medication that might render a man temporarily impotent? The case of Tim with the bouts of moderate depression. I changed the vignette to remove the moderate to severe because of the discussion we had in the class about treating depression last time, because it really made it fairly clear cut that it was a pikuach nefesh case and there wasn't anything further to discuss. But does the medication count as serus? Is temporary serus prohibited? So medication does count as serus. We saw that in the Kos Shelly Karin case. Right, that's already relatively straightforward. If you take a look on the third side of your sheets, you have the Rambam on it in Source Yates. Hamashka ikarin el adam. If you give roots, herbs to a person, o l'sha'ar minim, or for that matter to an animal, kidei l'sarso, in order to make him a saris, hareza aser. That's aser ve'in lo kin olav. There are no malkos. There are no malkos for doing it. It's considered indirect causation. That's why there are no malkos. The isha mutaris lishtos ikarin kedelasar sahaj lo telaid. However, a woman is permitted to take this medication, and I'm going to leave out the rest. It's not immediately germane for us. The woman's case also is not immediately germane for us. The Rambam says though it's aser. But no malkos. If you take a look at the Chazon Ish, source Chaf, he says ve'al devar hanituach b'choli atziras hashesen al yedei stimas shvil hashesen haba minifichas habaser hayadua. So the Chazon Ish is dealing with the case that we're talking about. He says surgery for someone whose urination is blocked because the path for the urine to travel is blocked because of the neficha, expansion of, bloating of, inflammation of the known flesh. He says, Abasar hayadua, velochets al tsinor hashesen visosmo. It's pressing on the urethra and sealing it. Ubisha'as nituach muchrachem lahafsik gam shvila shechva zera muvla baguf. So there you go. At the time of the surgery, it's necessary to sever the path through which the seed is going to go, which is inside the body. So that's his statement, Lazy. You have your support in the Chazon Ish himself. Lefima shekasavnu, based on what we've written, ein baze iser siris de'oraisa. The biblical prohibition against siris will not apply because it's inside the body. Rak de la rabbanan kemosh siyas kos ikarin. It will only be rabbinic, like drinking the kos shel ikarin. So it's a rabbinic prohibition for, as the Chazon Ish understands it, to take any sort of medication that will make somebody a saris. That's number one. Number two, though, that's very important to remember in this discussion is that he's talking permanent serus. He's not talking temporary serus at all. If you take a look at Source Chaf Aleph.
So, the point that, remember, you can ultimately become a serus from a variety of different surgeries. You have spinal surgery, you can also have that.
Right.
Totally. So, the whole idea is that only as long as you don't touch the Vare Zachar, then basically, whatever you do, even though it renders...
Right, causing neuropathy or something like that is not...
Correct.
Right.
At the end of the day, you have spinal surgery for something else, and
right.
You know that becomes an issue. It's nothing to do with, so you're still left as a serous. But, and that would be, what he's saying is, that's not going to be a serous d'oraisa, at least.
Correct, that's correct. Serous d'oraisa is... Right, serous d'oraisa is damage to the organs of the reproductive system. And when we say organ, and we define that very narrowly.
Right,
we define that more narrowly. If you take a look at Source Chaf Aleph, you see the Gemara there in Yevamos with a classic story for many purposes. Yehudis divisud Rabbi Chia havalot sar leida. Yehudis, the wife of Rabbi Chia, had great pain when she gave birth. Shanoi mana, I gave you a little translation there in the brackets, hachlifa begodesh, she changed her clothes. Va'asya l'kamei Rabbi Chia, and she came to Rabbi Chia, and the point was it was a disguise. She disguised herself. Amra, and she said to him, "Itasa mifkada piriya verivya? Is a woman instructed in procreation?" Amar lalo, he said to her, "No." Asla ishtiya samadakarta. So she went and drank a potion which would render her unable to reproduce. She felt that labor was just, it was excruciating, and she didn't want to go through that again. And so she tricked her husband into giving her the answer that would permit her to take this drink. This story is worthy of a shiur in and of itself. There's a lot going on here. But I mention it here only because it shows that this drink that we're talking about was talking about permanent sresis. We're talking about permanent inability to reproduce, not something that is temporary. So what the Chazon Ish said, we're talking about kozhal ikar and being asur midirabanan, that is likely only a permanent effect, and so it appears from the descriptions in the poskim of sirus as a whole, and therefore it seems that taking a medication which is going to cause someone to be unable to reproduce, but when he stops taking the medicine, he'll be able to reproduce, is not considered to be a prohibited form of sirus at all. It would seem not to be a consideration at all. It would seem to be fine, especially when at worst it's a derabanan, and you're taking it for situations which warrant violating a derabanan. Whether you're talking about depression or whether you're talking about other illnesses, they generally would warrant violating the derabanan anyway. Okay, which brings us to our third case. Going back to the issue of sirus for women, and Jane, who does not wish to have children, she goes to her frum doctor and says, I would like to have a plug inserted in the fallopian tubes. Is the physician able to do this? And would she be able to remarry? So this is an option for women who, it's less extreme than surgery. The research that I've done indicates that it is not generally considered reversible. Even though you can do a surgery to remove the plug, number one, surgery is required. Number two, that doesn't necessarily mean that she's actually going to be able to have children afterwards because of what it does to the tissue there. So we said already that sirus for women is in a lesser category than sirus for men. Were it to be reversible, we would have plenty of heterim for this. The Tzitz Eliezer writes that in Source Chav Beis. He says, "V'tziyun miyuchad lahatir bazeh." He's dealing with a different case. He's not dealing with our case. He's dealing with a case in which it is a reversible blockage. So he says, and a special reason to permit this case that he's dealing with, "Ba'asher she'ein zeh sirus timidi," is that it's not a lasting sirus. "V'efsher b'chol zman liftoach es haskima," at any point one could open up the seal. "V'kasher mavtichim v'kazos harofim she'yazu zos acharei she'itavri v'lo yichpada ha'irayon aleha," and the doctors pledged to her that when she is healthier and able to become pregnant, able to bear a pregnancy, then they will indeed undo the surgery. How reversible does reversible have to be? So if you take a look, did I reproduce it here? I'm sorry, that was bad. That wasn't on purpose. Yes, right. Are you sure of that? You know the tube, or you're okay. Yeah, well, it's definitely different from the silicone plug. The only reason I'm asking is because of the cases that are going to be mentioned in Chaf Gimel. There's an article written by a husband and wife team, Rabbi Yoel Katan and his wife Chana, who is a doctor, on these issues, and they discuss this issue of temporary. What does it mean when it's a temporary infertility that it's going to cause? And he says, "Bismaniot." When we're talking about things that are temporary, "Miskaven kanira hagon Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg shlita leefsharis hakayemas levatel es kashiras hachatzotros." It seems that he would include in temporary the possibility that tubes are tied and then afterwards can be undone. Where the tying is done in a certain way such that it doesn't damage the essential function of the tubes. And there in the article they give you footnotes to different methods that physicians have of carrying out the surgery. Or in such a way that what you do is you press at a certain point on the tube and the egg is not able to pass. But they're not damaging the actual tube. Alternatively, he says, maybe it's even going to include where you could use microsurgery to reverse the operation. That might even be called temporary as well. Anything that's not a major invasion of the body, he's willing to consider, or they're willing to consider, perhaps being within temporary. It's an interesting argument. How far would we go with this? But it doesn't seem like it would apply to the plugs. So what are the heterim to perform the procedure? Well, since we say that the level of the prohibition for her in the first place is low, right? We said it's a derabanan maybe it's causing a pain that's the prohibition according to the Taz, maybe it's an iser lo sase without malkos attached to it. If there were a significant reason to cause her not to want to become pregnant, it's not simply that she doesn't want to become pregnant, but we're dealing with a woman who has poor health or who had a painful experience before, something along those lines, postpartum depression, something like that. I think that the physician would be able to perform the procedure. I have to give my caveat, which I actually forgot to mention in the beginning. As always, in practical issues, please consult the Rav. But it would require some degree of justification. On the other hand, it seems clear that she is able to get married, because we've already said Ptsua Daka does not apply to women. It only applies to men. And if you take a look at Source Chav Dalet, you see an example of that.
Is this plug more or less permanent than the
I think it's more permanent, because they say that even if they pull out the plug, she's not going to be able to... They say you have to assume that she's not going to be able to reproduce. Yeah? Okay, so this is a question for the physicians. This isn't a question I can answer. I don't know enough about tubal ligation to be able to. Their statement is that tubal ligation also, when it's reversed, does not allow her to reproduce.
Well, the obstetricians will tell you that it's technically reversible, but not likely that one will. It's technically reversible.
Right.
But it's not a very good...
So you get into the question of percentages.
But actually, this is highly reversible, because what they do is they don't bother the tubes anymore. They look at this as a tubal infertility case, and so then they harvest the eggs, they take the sperm, mm-hmm. they flush it back in, so they still get pregnant. They just bypass the tubal problem. This is actually a highly treatable infertility case.
What are the odds of success in that treatment?
Depends on the age of the woman. So she's good.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question, because it raises, really, it sort of raises the stakes on Chav Gimel of what do we count as reversible. I'm not sure that whether that counts or not. Part of it also involves the question of how are they going to get the seed in the first place, and separate challenges that come up halachically. It's an interesting question. I wonder.
In all of the truths of Rav Moshe, I mean, when he's discussing tubal ligation, which is seemingly a little bit more reversible, and the cases he has four or five cases that he described where they are very, very, for the woman not to have, I mean, the reason that she should not have children, it still comes out that one shouldn't, he doesn't allow it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's very strong on that particular point, and with very good, what appears to be justification. This seems, I don't know, like I'm trying to...
Interesting. I have to go back and look at the Chuvos on it. I'm not sure what he's working with when he discusses it, in terms of both in terms of the justification and in terms of the technology. So that's one that I'll research and get back to you about. Because on the face of it, the tubal ligation, the issue of Cirrus, seems to be one that's surmountable depending on the level of need, based on what we've said about Cirrus for women. Yeah, so I don't know. I have to go ahead and take a look, and I have to come back to you with it. Which blue nether I will do. But in terms of the Ptsua Daka, we know that it doesn't apply to women. If you take a look at Source Chav Dalet, the Sefer HaChinuch, he actually says it straightforwardly. He says it applies. I'm jumping to the end of it, because I just looked at the clock and saw that we're already hitting 10. The Noah Yisr Zebachal Makom L'chol Zman B'Zacharim. It applies to males. The Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, does note a lone view among the Rishonim of Rav Arama, who says that that there is an issue maybe for women not to marry a woman who is unable to reproduce, and the Menachas Yitzchak wants us to worry about that view. There is such a view, but it's definitely not the majority. It would seem that if Jane in number 3 has a reason for it that's beyond simply I don't want to become pregnant, there would be something to discuss, and she, having had the procedure, she should be able to get married. Last, the case of endometrial ablation.
According to the actual wording of your case, if she just doesn't want to have kids,
it would not be justified. Right? Correct. Correct.
She's Gentile.
Right, so that raises a whole other question about non-Jews and whether these prohibitions apply to non-Jews in the first place. And if they do, what are the ins and outs of dealing with that prohibition? It's beyond the scope of what I'm prepared for today. Right. I mean, that's a question, but with any branch of medicine, you're going to hit certain cases where you will have a problem. So
that's your bread and butter.
That's the bread and butter.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
That's the biggest procedure.
Interesting.
Which you can't do going by.
So the last case is endometrial ablation. Right. The case in which a woman is dealing with heavy or prolonged bleeding, and it's causing her pain, it's rendering her a need on an ongoing basis, the bleeding is resistant to treatment, and the physician recommends endometrial ablation. It destroys the endometrial lining, at least temporarily, if not permanently, and our question is this permitted, is this serious, is this considered temporary, how do I look at this procedure? So, number one, it is serious. I mean, taking out the lining, prevents her from having kids. On the other hand, number one, you have an issue of need, and need could in and of itself be a heter, given what we've discussed about the concern for serous. Number two, there's an interesting back and forth that I saw in the 10th volume of the journal Asia as to whether whether this is considered permanent or not. What are the percentages of women who afterwards are able to reproduce because the lining comes back? But third, and perhaps most important, is the debate of whether I can call this davar she'eino miskaven, unintentional. We said regarding prostate surgery that the fact that it would be misares a man is not your goal. It's davar she'eino miskaven. It's not what you want to have happen. Can I make the argument here? Your goal is not to render her infertile. Your goal here is simply to stop the bleeding. So the answer, it seems, is no, for a very interesting reason. And it takes us to the heart of davar she'eino miskaven in general. Davar she'eino miskaven means I perform an action and my intent is for something other than a violation of the prohibition. If I could separate the two out, I would. Here, the endometrial ablation, the goal is to remove the endometrial lining, which by definition is serous. My goal is the serous. I don't want to violate the law, but my goal is removal of the lining, as opposed to in the case of the prostate surgery, where my goal is to cut away prostate tissue, my goal is not to damage the urethra at all. Here, my goal is the removal of the endometrial lining, which is what causes the serous. That's the difference between the two, potentially. So that the davar she'eino miskaven argument may not work. If you take a look at source Chav Zayin Chav Ches, we'll see on this. I'm jumping Chavav, it's too much for right now. But Chav Zayin, the Gemara in Krisus, they're talking about raking coals. Tana Rabbanan, Brisa says, Achote gecholim b'Shabbos lischamein bahem. You rake coals on Shabbos because you want to be warmed by them. V'huva rumei elehen. And naturally, they're exposed to the air. The ones that have been underneath are now exposed, and therefore they ignite again. One says you're liable, the other one says you're potter. The one who says you're liable, kasavar malacha sheinit zvicha legufa chayav aleha. V'ad etana potter, kasavar malacha sheinit zvicha legufa potter aleha. The debate is about what's called malacha sheinit zvicha legufa, which means malacha done on Shabbos for a purpose other than that for which it was done in the Mishkan. Ordinarily, havara, lighting a fire, is not for the sake of the warmth of the fire. There are other reasons for lighting a fire in the Mishkan. Therefore, this is categorized as malacha sheinit zvicha legufa. That's a side point. The point is, no one mentions here davar she'eino miskaven. It's not intended. My goal is not to ignite the coals. My goal is simply warmth. I don't want to ignite the coals. Why don't I say Darashena Miskavein? So Rashi explains in source Chavches that the reason is because it is Miskavein. Havale Miskavein. It is Miskavein. That is my goal. My goal is the igniting of the coals. I just don't want to break the law. But my goal is igniting the coals. Similarly here, my goal is removal of the endometrial lining. I don't want to make her infertile, but that's what I'm doing, and that's effectively what I'm trying to do. So the Davashenu Miskavein argument does not work here. It still may be justified, right? Based on pain and based on medical need, anemia, whatever, yeah, it may well be justified because of the relatively low level of the concern for serous. However, the other possible heter of Davashenu Miskavein is not useful to me in this circumstance. So I want to summarize, and then for those who can stay, I want to go through one additional point about Petzuah Daka and how I know it refers to the parts inside the body. It's a fascinating Gemara. It'll take an extra 5-7 minutes, though. But just to go back over the vignettes, the first case, Jason, who is experiencing painful, difficulty in urination, etc., can he undergo TURP? The answer seems to be TURP does not render him a Petzuah Daka, because it's inside the body, because it's done for the purpose of medical treatment. It may even be considered bidei shamayim. It would be an act of sirus. However, it's davar she'eino miskavein. It's not the intended. The sirus is not the intended result. And davar she'eino miskavein will naturally take down the level of the prohibition, and then with the medical need, will be permitted. The second case is Tim with his medication. We said medication does count as sirus. However, it's temporary. Stop taking the medicine, and it ends. And therefore, it would seem to be permitted. The silicone plug case for Jane. It would seem that she would need some sort of reason beyond "I don't want to have children" in order to justify having the plug put in. There would have to be something greater than that there, unless we say it's reversible, depending on how we view the potential reversibility of the treatment, whether it requires intervention, some form of what sounds like a form of IVF, in order to make it happen. Does that make this? Would that help us consider this reversible or not? And then we would say she would be able to get married. She would not be considered a Petzuah Daka under some prohibition to get married, because that doesn't apply to women, other than that lone view quoted by the Menchas Yitzchak. Finally, the issue of endometrial ablation. So it would seem that this would be considered serous. We could not permit it under Darvashayna Miskavein. I don't believe we could consider it temporary either. On the other hand, with the justification of anemia, pain, and I don't know what else, those are the things that I saw might be involved in having this heavy bleeding, we might have room to permit it because of the relatively low level of the prohibition for serous for women. I really should have done more work on the Ben Noach case. Maybe I'll do some work on that and send that out by email also. The issue of dealing with a patient who's not Jewish should probably be discussed as well. For those who can stay for the last 5 or 6 minutes, there's an additional note here. For those who can't, I'm not insulted. If you take a look on your sheets, we have an incredibly problematic set of Gemaras. They say things that really the Gemara doesn't seem like it should be saying, and we need to resolve it. If you take a look on your second side, source Yud Aleph, Gemara Bechoros. Tana Rabbanan, Brisa says, Shnei Nekavim Yesh Bo Ba'adam. There are two holes in a person. Echad motzi shesa in a man. Echad motzi shesa and ve'echad motzi shechva zera. One of them produces urine, the other one produces seed. Ve'ein bein zela ze ela keklipas hashum. And there is only a membrane as thin as the skin of garlic in between them. Bishash adam nitzrach, when a person has to urinate, im nikvu zela toch ze nimtza akar. If one gets pierced into the other, he can become infertile. It sounds like, on the face of it, to me, they're suggesting that there are actually two tubes going to the end, and that they only have a membrane in between them, and one goes and the other one is sealed, that's what it sounds like, which is clearly not biologically correct. I mean, it doesn't seem to fit anything that we know about biology. So we need to figure that out. But take a look at source Yud Beis. It gets better. Yeah, Yud Beis. Hahu Uvda, Zegemar Yevamos. Hahu Uvda Dahava Bepumbadisa. This story happened in Pumbadisa, in Fallujah. Istatim Gusa de Shechva Zera. There was a man whose tube for seed was sealed up. V'apik b'makom ketanim. And instead, it came out at the place where urine should come out. Sava Rabibi Barabaye Lachshure. Rabibi Barabaye thought that this man should be considered kosher to get married. Amar of Puppy, where Puppy says to him, Bishum da asumi muloi amrisu mili muliasa. This is an insult that's beyond the scope of what we're saying right now, but he says what you've said is entirely wrong. Bimakama mevashla shlebimakama lo mevashla. This seed is not prepared properly. If it's coming out from the place of urine, he won't be able to procreate. So this is a problem, especially because we know that the Chachamim dealt in surgery to no small extent. They should have known that there's one tube, the urethra, and that what happens is further back you have the seed and the point where it's coming from the bladder, and the two converge, and that's the way it works. You have this internal sphincter that's supposed to keep the seed from retrograde ejaculation.
You're looking at the wrong part of the
vas. Yes.
If you look at where the vas physically enters the prostate,
good.
You do not get retrograde flow of urine into the vas.
Yeah.
You don't get it because in order for sperm to exit through that, you actually need to create a physical opening, which is ordinarily closed.
Mm-hmm.
So factually, anatomically, they are correct, but not in the location you think.
So that's one answer. Hang on. I wanted to give you the walkthrough of it, but you're already beating me to it. The first approach is the approach of the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish's answer is Nishtana Hateva. Nature has changed. He says the biology is now different. Rav Chaim David Padua, in his Cheshev HaEifod, he was the head of the Jewish community in London in the first part of the 20th century, says, absolutely not. You have Mishnayos and Mikvaos, for example, that talk about a Baal Keri being tummy until he goes to Mikvah, and it talks about the seed and the urine being in the same tube inside the member. It's explicit there that it's one tube. He says it's the Mishnah and Mikvaos. The Rashi and the Rambam both explained it that way, that there's one tube. So what do you mean, Nishtana Ateva, that nature has changed between the Gemara's time and Rashi's time? What do you do with that Mishnah? He brings you other sources. He says it can't be. And so, Rav Padua in his Cheshev HaEifod suggests an approach which Rav Mordechai Halperin in his article in Asya adopts and modifies a little bit. If you take a look at Source Yud Gimel, he says, Shnei HaNekavim, the two holes that were discussed in Bechoros, Haim 1, Shvilei HaZera HaMagim HaLashovcha Derech HaArmoni, the tubes where the seed is coming to the urethra, the shofcha is the urethra, derech ha'armoni, via the prostate. That's one of the two holes. And then two, hachilak ha'krevani, shel ha'shofcha, that first part of the urethra, hayotze mitoch kis ha'shesen, which comes out of the bladder. Umagia nekudas ha'mifgash, which arrives at the juncture, im shvilei hazera, with the tubes that carry the seed. Keklipas hashum shebein zeh lazeh, this membrane that's between them, hi hachasima hafunktionalit. That is the functional ceiling, in parentheses he writes, his kavtsut shririt, the muscular contraction, he means the sphincter. Hamonas chadira zera lekis hashesen beis hatashmish, which keeps the seed from going back into the bladder at the time of tashmish. Hamonas chadira shesen leshvilei hazera beis hatala shesen, and keeps the urine from getting into the tubes where the seed is when a man is urinating. So he says that's your klipas hashum, and that's where you have a problem, because if there's a hole, as he presents it, if there's a hole in the place where the sphincter is supposed to be contracting, meaning not a hole literally necessarily, but his point is the sphincter is not contracting properly, that will lead to the man becoming an akar, being unable to reproduce. That's the way he explains it. Why does this matter beyond being an interesting resolution of the Gemara? Because they render that man a psuadaka. But where are these organs located? Inside. So this would be against the Chazon Ish. What the Chazon Ish gains by his Nishtana Hateva argument is he retains the possibility that if the damage is inside, then the man is not a psuadaka. Once you've told me we're dealing with organs that are inside the body, that heter is no longer available to me. Because now I see they called it a Ptsuadaka. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach argued against this reading because he said there's no way that in that story where the man in Yevamos, where the man had this experience, there's no way that they had the technology to know that what was going on that far inside. If you have a sealing of the tube back inside, or if you have the sphincter not functioning, they're not going to know that. They wouldn't have been able to diagnose it in the day of the Gemara. So that's his point against this. But if we would take the approach of the Cheshev HaEifon and a Mordechai Halperin and Yud Gimel, then the result would be that we would lose that heter. We still have the other heterim, but he's not called a Ptsuadaka because it's being done therapeutically, because it's being done as a result of illness, and therefore we call it Bidei Shamayim, and so on. But it's a point worth noting.
The assumption is
Lachshurei here means Ptsuadaka, not Saris. Yes, Lachshurei means Kashalav Abakal, just like the Psul before was Ptsuadaka. They're not dealing here with Saris. Yes, but they're not dealing here with Saris. Okay, thank you very much. I think our next one is...